This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
G'day, you are listening to the Indie Media Show here on RTR FM 92.1, your grassroots activist lefty news program. Huge thanks to Jeff for the last 2 hours of On The Record. Fantastic as always. Love the tie-dye shirt. And we are broadcasting on the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. We'd like to offer our respects to them and their elders past and present. Always was, always will be. Aboriginal land. My name is Joni Boyd, and I'm joined here in the studio by my co-host Alex Chapman. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Like, well, Alex Chapman. Alex Wisson.
Where's
Alex?
Oh my god.
We'll go with Alex.
Oh,
Alex Chapman.
I've got another
Alex
mate.
Chapman can be my nom de guerre.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. No, no.
I've got another Frio mate called Alex Chapman.
That's all right. That can be my undercover name, Alex Chapman. But no, I'm distracted, Joni. Lovely to be with you, by the way. But I'm distracted because I'm basically blinded by the exploding, spectacular light. Light show that is just
the psychedelic revelation.
I need to put my sunglasses.
Oh, it's got
back
Bob
on,
Ross
even
on
though
it.
I'm in the studio because it's just a magnificent display of colour and pizzazz. So kudos to Jeff for looking so wonderful and colourful in the studio.
So today on the show, we've got a bunch of stuff for you. We will be chatting to Noemi Hutner-Koros from Arts and Culture Workers for Climate Action about Chevron pulling out from Perth Festival, which we touched on last week, but we reckon we'll give it a little bit more of a deep dive. So that'll be first up in just a moment. What else have we got?
Plenty to discuss on that, isn't there? Joni and I were just discussing a little before off air the whole long history of the commercial world sponsoring the art world. Lots of issues involved in that. But yeah, we're also going to be hearing about the Black Spark Collective over in Melbourne. This is an attempt at a social centre. We've got our own efforts here in Perth, actually trying to establish a social centre. So it's an interview brought by Andy Payne, who's the host of one of our sister shows, Paradigm Shift, on 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Very much a friend of the show. He's even been a guest presenter on the show, Andy. And we like to share some of his content every once in a while. So Andy actually had the chance to speak to somebody involved in the Black Spark Cultural Centre Social Collective over there in Melbourne, which puts on art exhibitions. Speaking of actually commercial sponsorship of the art world, this is an example of an autonomous independent collective that puts on its own, you know, autonomous independent art exhibitions. It uses this venue in Northcott for meeting spaces. There's a library there, etc. So a fantastic initiative by activists carving out their own physical space, their own autonomous space where they can have their own independent activities. And it's run into a bit of trouble renewing the lease, so Andy spoke to them about you know, some of what's going on with that collective.
You know, that kind of a grassroots arts org thing, I think a lot of our listeners can get behind. Listeners of RTR FM, you know, I think we very much believe in, you know, a collective effort to, you know, keep the arts moving. You know, we've got a couple of sponsorships here and there, but a huge portion of our funding comes from you guys out there. So, you know, I'm sure you can relate to trying to put on grassroots arts organisations and stuff like that.
That's everything that this station is about. I feel like I'm giving a radiothon plug now. But everything that this station is about is about promoting independent art and music that's not tainted, shall we say, by the compromises it's forced to make sometimes by commercial, commercial arrangements, commercial sponsorship arrangements.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll probably have a chat about some other issues later on in the show.
Indeed. Well, plenty happening. Actually, we'll just stop the sentence there. I mean, that's the kind of world we're living in. Where do you even start? Ukraine, Iran, there's so many things happening. But yeah, a few comments about some of the latest developments with the protests in Iran, which are at one and the same time terrifying developments with a lot of people being killed on the streets of Iran, a lot of brave protesters being killed by security forces, but also like incredibly inspiring as well. It's protests spreading throughout the country. So we'll discuss that in a bit of detail as well. We'll be right back.
As we touched on last week, US oil giant Chevron has pulled out of a decades-long partnership with Perth Festival. They're pulling out after next year's program. This comes after pressure from many community groups to get Perth Festival and other arts organisations like Fringe World to stop the greenwashing of the fossil fuel industry. Here to chat more about it, a bit more in depth, with thanks to Fossil Free Arts WA, we've got poet, theatre maker and activist Noemi Hutner-Koros from Arts and Culture Workers for Climate Action to put this into a little bit more context and ask what happens next. G'day, Noemi. Thanks for joining us on Indie Media this morning.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, no worries. Very good to have you on the show. So give us a rundown of what Arts and Culture Workers for Climate Action does and the sort of broader movement. And some of the actions you've done to put pressure on Perth Festival and why it's so important.
Yeah, totally. So Arts and Culture Workers for Climate Action grew out of the 2019 Global Strike for Climate, and it was really a way for us as artists and culture workers to come together and support the three demands of school strike and kind of come together as a sector and as a body of workers and say that, we really needed to organise and really had a voice as artists and also as an industry that has been too silent on the climate crisis. So we kind of grew out of that original strike, and we brought together, I think, 100 different arts organisations and hundreds of different artists to all go on strike on that day with School Strike for Climate. And then since then we've organised... we've organised different events, panels and kind of mobilisations, and we were a core part of the campaign for Fringe World to divest, or partially divest, I should say, from Woodside. And we've been working alongside community groups and climate justice groups in Perth to, keep supporting the campaigns that are happening locally. And I guess, why it's so important for us to be doing this work is, I think we're in a really important position in Western Australia to be advocating for what comes next beyond fossil fuels, both in the arts but more broadly. We have a huge opportunity to transition our society away from fossil fuels and demand something better. And when things like this happen, for example, with Perth Festival's divestment, it just shows that arts organisations and artists can take leadership and can be a part of the social movement away from fossil fuels, which, arts have been a part of every single huge social movement in the last 50 years. So, yeah, I think it's really important that as artists we don't shy away from these big topics.
For sure. So more on this split. So in the media, we're seeing that it was Chevron that pulled the plug on Perth Festival, where ideally we'd like to see it the other way around, our big festivals taking a stand. But I imagine there's more going on behind the scenes. Why do you think Chevron's pulled out this way?
I mean, I obviously can't say for sure because who knows what Chevron does behind the scenes.
For sure, yeah.
Dodging tax and all that kind of stuff. But, I think there was, like, particularly the last Perth Festival, we saw Tim Winton speaking out really publicly. Stella Donnelly made a really public statement about the Woodside sponsorship at her concert. And so I think there's been, this sustained community pressure across the last 4 to 5 years it's been coming from so many different angles, from, people within the festival, and to the board, as well as, there were activists outside of, what was formerly known as the Chevron stage, doing these actions every single year. And, groups like XR and 350 Perth, 350 Boulou. So I think they were probably getting quite a bit of bad press. And, I think it just goes to show that when, all these groups come together and kind of do their... Everybody does tactics in different ways and strategizes differently, but, is all working towards similar goals. it means that we're sort of chipping away at the social license of the fossil fuel industry to operate. So, yeah, I think it was probably a combination of that bad press. And, you know, I also like to think that, you know, that Perth Festival has been putting a lot of thought into their own transition in the last few years. So I don't know, but I really hope that it's also come from, you know, internal discussions about, like, okay, well, what are we going to do next? And I guess, sorry, this is a bit long, but another thing I think it shows is that fossil fuel companies will, you know, they do this to their workers where they'll just leave people without a plan. And you know, I don't know what the conversations were here, but I think it really shows us that these companies don't care about the future of, you know, a sustainable art sector in Western Australia, for example. And so that's why we really have to take this into our own hands and think about what's our long-term plan here. How are we going to sustain ourselves for the long run? And that's why, you know, one of the three demands of School Strike for Climate is a just transition for fossil fuel workers and their communities. So anyway, yeah.
Naomi, it's Alex Wisson here, and you've partly answered what was going to be my next question, because and it's maybe a little bit unfair to ask you this question in a way. It's beyond the remit of your group, but it strikes me that there is a much wider, more fundamental structural problem here, isn't there, in terms of the way the arts world is funded. There's this kind of inextricable link between the commercial world and the arts world, sponsorship at every level. So the question is, okay, Chevron withdraws its sponsorship. Is it then inevitably replaced by another corporate sponsor? So there's a structural problem there. Really, there should be public funding of these arts festivals. So how do we prevent that problem of, okay, one fossil fuel corporation removes itself from the scene, but is it then just going to be replaced by another corporate sponsor? And that raises the question of, surely we need a totally different, you know, new funding model for the arts, which is really public funding.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. This is a huge discussion, and I think for sure we need to be advocating for the fact that the arts are a human right, that absolutely everybody in this country should be able to access freely, and, you know, that cultural rights are absolutely fundamental. So there's that point. And I also think, you know, none of these companies that are making record profits are paying tax. And so we could have a system, again, that's probably a bigger conversation, but, you know, that is another really reason why we're seeing a lot of underfunding of public services. And then I also think, you know, yeah, the arts sector as a whole in Australia is, especially the small to medium-like sector, and, you know, especially independent artists who are, like, amongst the lowest paid workers in this country are really struggling. So, I do think that for arts organisations, they do have to be brave and actually recognise that there is money to be had in a lot of other areas. So there's, you know, renewable energy companies, there's all kinds of new partnerships and that become possible when we actually say, this is the boundary, this is where we draw the line. We're not going to take, for example, funding from tobacco companies, companies, from weapons, or, you know...
I was going to say, arms companies? Is that still an... Surely arms companies are okay.
I think we need to switch our mindset, actually, from a sense that of precarity, or, I guess, towards a sense of abundance, that there actually is enough money. We just have to be more wise about where we get it from, and we have to be like, once we decide that that's the line, where else can we go? What other partnerships and actually relationships can we build that are grounded in common values and not just a kind of quick transaction, but actually things that we care about? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. This is the Indie Media Show, and we're chatting to Naomi Hunt-Koros from Arts and Culture Workers for Climate Action. So in the UK, the Royal Shakespeare Company just dropped a partnership with BP. Locally, Fringe World has partially divested from Woodside, as you mentioned earlier. And, you know, there's a broader movement of getting you know, fossil fuels out of advertising and other cultural spaces, like we're just seeing down in Frio. The Frio Council is moving to remove any fossil fuel advertising from their, you know, from public view. Do you think that this broader movement to stop the greenwashing of the fossil fuel industry is having much success globally or nationwide?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just this morning I was looking up while preparing for this. You know, there's been $40 trillion globally that have been divested away from fossil fuels.
$40 trillion?
It's absolutely massive. And, you know, it's huge. And we see that, like, divestment is actually such a such an important tactic for people to understand that for the last 30, 40 years, for longer than I've been alive, the fossil fuel industry have been consistently undermining climate action, especially in Australia, at every single level. So if we want to change, if we want to take action on climate change, we have to say that the status quo of fossil fuel companies polluting our politics, you know, undermining every attempt at climate action cannot go on any longer. And also that we have to say that that we cannot open up any new coal, oil or gas projects if we want to stay below 1.5 degrees. So I think, you know, every single divestment builds on this, and it allows us to communicate with the public and also allows us to channel money away from these projects towards projects that advance climate justice. So, I think it's huge, especially, you know, in the arts, like you said, Royal Shakespeare Company, the Tate Museum, Edinburgh Fringe. At the moment, there's a campaign for Darwin Festival to divest from Santos. And, you know, this is also happening not just in the cultural kind of sphere, but, you know, churches, superannuation funds, banks, all kinds of companies. And I think, you know, we have a real opportunity here to build something different, something that, you know, actually supports life on this planet. So I'm really excited about these new conversations that are happening.
Yeah, $40 trillion, that's a bit of a shot in the arm, actually. That's quite a large amount of money to be divested.
You know,
and that's overall, you know, that's worldwide, but I don't know, that's perked me up a little bit.
That's a fair amount of money.
Yeah, totally. And it's everyone from, you know, like the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund to the Rockefeller Foundation, you know. I think, you know, obviously divestment is just like one strategy within a broader social kind of movement. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a really important strategy. And it's something that kind of we're all implicated in. We're all implicated in, like, global financial systems that uphold fossil fuel industry.
It's definitely something that involves a diversity of tactics. You know, like those heroes are tying themselves to the you know, Newcastle Port train tracks and things like that. Big conversation. Yeah. But so for your specific group and you know, the local movements in Perth, what's next now that you know, Perth Festival and Chevron have split? You know, where does the pressure move now?
Yeah, well, I think something that's really important for us to be doing is celebrating this win and communicating why it's so important. So we've put out an open letter that we encourage everyone to sign, thanking and congratulating Perth Festival on this next step. If you go into our Instagram, you can sign that and share it and, you know, post on Perth Festival. You can email the artistic director and say, hey, good job, keep going. There's the Say No to Scarborough Gas campaign, which, you know, everyone should get involved in because Scarborough Gas is horrific. I think we just have to keep having these conversations. I know there's some amazing work happening with PVI Collective through the Chamber of Arts and Culture about funding and the fossil fuel industry. But I also think this isn't just a matter of money, although money is really important, but it's actually about, as arts organisations, like, deeply thinking about how we act in an age of climate crisis as artists who shape culture. So I think money is one of them, but I'm really heartened, I guess, by this event that PVI Collective is doing with the Chamber, because I hope, you know, money is one step, and from there we can talk about lots and lots of other really important things. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll leave it there. Loads of places that our listeners can go, loads of actions that our listeners can do to get involved in not just stopping the greenwashing that you know, our arts organisations do for the fossil fuel industry, but you know, stopping them in general, and talking about these conversations outside of just where the money's going. Any final thoughts, Alex?
Just one quick question, Naomi, that's not something I've really thought about before, to be honest, is the involvement of audiences and the role potentially of consumer boycotts. Because it strikes me with some of these campaigns in recent times, hasn't necessarily engaged with the patrons of these arts festivals. Or perhaps I'm wrong in saying that. Perhaps that's just my impression that it's, you know, it's all coming understandably from artists themselves in terms of trying to end these sponsorships. But is there potentially a role for the audience, for patrons, you know, in boycotting some of these events? Or how do you get, you know, audiences more involved in this process?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's super important for, you know, audiences to be saying to festivals and to arts organisations that, you know, we won't come, you know, we won't attend, or also that this is what we really need you to be thinking about and you know, presenting a solid transition plan for the next, you know, year or 5 years. I think that's what we really need to be pushing for, is transition plans. So I think for all, you know, audiences to start emailing, to put pressure on in those ways, is super important. And then I know that was a big part of the Fringe campaign, was actually audiences emailing and posting and contacting the head of Fringe and saying, hey, we love Fringe World, we want it to keep going, but also we're in a climate crisis, this isn't good enough. So I think we can also frame it like that, in that, you know, art has to keep going, we want the arts to continue,
And ultimately, if patrons or customers, as they would be thought of, aren't paying to come through the doors, then you're sort of forced to take notice as a festival organiser, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's really important that, you know, everyone who engages with art, it feels like they have a voice and a part of it.
For sure, for sure.
All right, I reckon we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Noemi, for joining us on the show. And all the best for the rest of your day over East.
Thanks. See you later. Bye.
See ya.
Bye. That was Noemi Hutner-Koros. They were representing arts and culture workers for Climate Action. And, I reckon that was a bloody good chat there. I don't know about you, Alex, but...
Oh, no, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. But in this context, Joni, I can't resist. Let's maybe not have a lengthy discussion about it, but I'm just going to throw it out there in this context, as I'm sure listeners would have seen the soup protest, shall we call it the soup protest, with throwing the soup onto the glass of the Van Gogh painting. I'm not going to voice my own opinion, but I'm just going to put that out there as to is that or is that not an effective and worthwhile form of protest? I'll let you as the listener decide. But I just thought that was worth mentioning in this context.
That's your homework here from Alex from Indie Media. What do you reckon? Send us a text on 0405 921 921.
Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
This is the Indie Media Show with me, Joni, and Alex Wisson. What have you got for us, Alex?
Well, we're going to play an interview from one of our sister programs, I like to think it of, Paradigm Shift on 4ZZZ in Brisbane, hosted by the wonderful Andy Payne, who's been a guest presenter on this show on occasions when he's in this neck of the woods. Really good guy, and very much, you know, on the same page, producing a lot of you know, sort of similar stuff to what we do here at the Indie Media Show. Last week he spoke to a Mercedes from the Black Spark Cultural Centre, or the Black Spark Collective. Very inspiring story of an independent, as we said, you know, at the top of the show, independent art space, community space, meeting space, library, and, you know, for members of the community to gather, not just for activist projects, but for a sense of basic community solidarity, to put on art shows, live gigs. Really fantastic stuff happening there at the Black Spark Cultural Centre. in Northcote. It's run into a bit of financial trouble, as tends to happen with these sorts of collectives, and was looking to renew its lease. And I think actually they have successfully completed their fundraiser. But if you look up Black Spark Cultural Centre, that's Black Spark Cultural Centre on Facebook, you'll find there's a link to a Chuffed fundraiser where I think you can still make donations to basically improve their financial health. But yeah, without further ado, as I say, Andy caught up with Mercedes from Black Spark last week.
Hey Andy, hey listeners, my name is Mercedes. I'm part of the Black Spark Collective, which is a free and open community space in Northcote in Nam.
Now, we're a long way from Northcote here, and a lot of us wouldn't have heard of Black Star. So can you tell us a bit about what the space is and what happens there?
Yeah, sure thing. So Black Spark, as I said, is a free and open community space. And a couple of years ago, a few friends, we got together and really recognising that there was less and less our public spaces and spaces to organise and together becoming less accessible. So we opened a space, basically. So it's got two rooms in, as I said, in Northcote, and we filled it with some really great radical literature. So it's a secondhand bookstore. We have events and gigs there. We've got a coffee machine, some couches, and the idea is really just to create a welcoming, comforting space for collaboration for artists and activists, a place to meet, a place to chill out, a place to organize. We have a music room as well, which we can, the space is really dynamic, so we've actually this weekend we've got an exhibition launch, as so we've kind of converted it into a gallery, and really just recognizing that the importance of spaces together to talk. And you know, we had the pleasure of chatting the other day, Andy, and you were saying that things can happen by people sitting around and talking and actioning them, and that really is a big part of what Black Spark is about.
It is radical, isn't it, in a world where everything's commercialized, to have places that exist just for people to use and not with a motive of making money out of it, hey?
Yeah, most definitely. And so we really want to keep it free and open and accessible, so there are no barriers for people to be engaged or involved. It's all volunteer-led, so we do it all volunteer. So also, you know, without those barriers, people like artists, activists, all the different people in our community can see, envision what they want to happen within the space, and we can facilitate to make that happen.
So how long has Black Spark been going for?
So we opened in December last year, so we've had the building for a little bit longer than that, obviously, with the lockdowns with COVID and everything like that. And so, yeah, we opened in December last year, and since that time we've run a bunch of fundraisers, and we've had different groups organise fundraisers and gigs through that, poetry launches, panel discussions, art auctions, art exhibitions, gigs with DJs and bands, and we've got a soundproof music room, so we've got bands that rehearse in there as well. And so yeah, it's a pretty diverse range of things that go on, and there's always something happening there, which is really cool.
Yeah, those DIY music and art spaces are so valuable, as so many people in the artistic community know. But there's also a lot of other groups that use Black Spark.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of activist groups use the space. It is a place for organising, so it's accessible at most times of the day. So people can come in there and have meetings in private. There's been art therapy in the groups that come in and use the space, yoga, life drawing. We've got life drawing next week. There's been shibari performances there. So yeah, it's definitely crosses those sort of boundaries, or not boundaries, because they're always interlinked, art and politics, and as they should be. And so yeah, it's used for the range of purposes, and things grow from it as well. It's not just that the space is there to use, that there are relationships that form and collaborations that happen from within the space. There's art made in the space, there's actioned from the space. So it's not just an empty shell. It has definitely has a life of of what happens inside of it, and it becomes part of those collaborative relationships.
Yeah, and that's one of the things about community spaces is that once they're there and there's a place where people can gather, it opens up new possibilities of what can happen that can't necessarily happen when places are strictly defined in what their usage is.
Yeah, most definitely. And I've been involved in community space. I did live out bush, but there was a community hub there. We actually got the old fire station. So there was lots of multi-purpose rooms and things there that we set up as a community space, that was set up as a community space. For supporting community, so there's a kitchen there, so we did community lunches all the time and things like that. So they are really, really important definitely necessary to keep people connected, and also, you know, personally as well, not just online, as obviously with COVID we saw a lot of things shift to online, communicating and organising and all of this sort of things, and the barriers that exist when everything is online, and obviously everything that comes alongside that with security, with organising. It's definitely important to be able to have places where we can meet in person and scheme.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of scheming myself. I think it's when we get together and talk and plan that we can envisage better possibilities for ourselves and the world around us. But all this talk of being free and open and accessible, it doesn't sound like much of a business plan, and it does seem that Black Sparks run into a little bit of financial trouble. Is that right?
Yeah, so we have managed to keep it, you know, relatively sustainable. We've put a bunch into it, obviously, and we do run events, and when we run events, you know, there are different ways in which, because we do try and keep it, no one's turned away. We often, you know, we'll run a bar at events, which initially was not the idea, but we realised that it's sort of a necessary thing in order for us to keep paying the rent for the building. And so at the moment, you know, we've just coming up to our lease renewal, and we, after some feedback from the community and people that have used the space and the volunteers that are involved in running Black Spark, we decided to put it out to the community to see if we could do a bit of a rent fundraiser and decide whether it was going to be feasible to carry on the lease for the next couple of years.
So how's the crowdfunding going?
It's going incredibly. It's really humbling to see how much the community is and our broader networks have really rallied around to keep the space open. So it's looking, you know, we're quietly confident that we're gonna get there, which is really exciting. And as I said, really humbling as well, because you do see that how much that everybody is supporting what it could be, and it's sort of already events being you know, tentatively planned for the coming year, so, which is really cool. So we've got a few, like, we've got a bunch of events this weekend. We've sort of been going pretty pretty hard at it. So we've got, you know, a gig at Cafe Gummo, where our comrades, which is a bar down here, so we've got a gig there tonight. We're holding an art auction at the moment, an online art auction, so we've had an incredible bunch of collaborators and artists who have donated works. So this is why we've got the exhibition launch tomorrow, and that's all online as well for people to bid. So we've run art auctions in the past for the 50th anniversary of the Tent Embassy and the Vic Forest Alliance, and they've been really successful, so we've decided to have a go at that for us. And, you know, it's always kind of the weird thing when you are raising money for, you know, your own projects. It takes a little bit of, you know, getting used to when you usually do it as fundraisers and things, but it has been pretty amazing seeing how much people have supported it.
So there's about a week left on that fundraiser and still a bit of money required to get over the line. So if people are listening and are keen to support Black Spark, how can they do that?
Yeah, so we have a Chuffed fundraiser going. So it's online at chuffed.com, and it's called Keep Black Spark Alight. and if people want to make in-kind donations, they can do it there. Or if you want to get involved on the gala bid for the art auction, there's some really beautiful pieces with an incredible breadth of medium and styles, and from people who have been connected to the space over the last year. And so that can be found at galabid.com/blackspark. And if you check out all of our social media, so we've got Instagram and Facebook, all of the links will be there for people to come and check out if they're interested.
That was Mercedes there from the Black Spark Social Centre or Cultural Centre, speaking to 4ZZZ's Andy Payne. And I believe that fundraiser has actually formally ended that Mercedes was talking about on chuff.org. But check out, nevertheless, the Black Spark Cultural Centre on Facebook, and I'm sure there's, you know, ways and means that you can show your support. But wonderful that I think they've raised $30,000. My understanding is, you know, formally renewed their lease, so they'll be there for a while yet. So inspiring story, and, yeah, hopefully we can... Yeah, emulate that sort of activity here in Perth.
Yeah, yeah, with the Frio social clubs.
Yeah, Joni and I talking off during the break, while the interview is being played, about the North Frio Social Club. That's one example of endeavours to emulate what's, you know, Melbourne always does it better, don't they? So we can do it. We should be able to do that.
They've anyway, got a more solid tradition of it, but
they do. Yeah. So it'd be great to see stuff like that popping up, you know, all around town, you know, over in this neck of the woods.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
And we're going to spend a little bit of time now talking about the latest developments in Iran, which we have covered on the show previously. Just a recap of the context. On September 16th, 22-year-old Iranian Kurdish woman Mahsa Amini died in police custody, having been detained by morality police for allegedly not wearing her hijab correctly. It died tragically in custody, as I say. And this was not the first time such an incident has taken place, but on this occasion it sparked widespread protests throughout Tehran. What I wanted to concentrate and really get across to you today is just the significant, basically the scale of the protest, because it's not the case, and I think it's very easy to get this impression that this is urban, middle-class exclusive protests. In fact, the protests have spread beyond Tehran as far afield as West Azerbaijan and Kemenchar, which is the Kurdish provinces, and also significantly into Balochistan. Now, those who aren't familiar with the Balochistan province in Iran, the Baluchi people have been fighting an independence cause against the central Iranian state for many decades. And some very significant protests in solidarity with Mahsa Amini and the women of Iran in Balochistan. And in fact, those protests have been brutally suppressed. More than 80 people are killed in Balochistan. Also significantly, protests breaking out in Qom. Now, those who don't know about the city of Qom, this is very much the heartland of the mullahs, of religious conservatives. It's a stable city in Iran, and very much is thought of as a support base for the Ayatollah and, you know, the Supreme Council, the clerics around him. So protests breaking out even in places like Qom. And it's not just students and young people either. So oil workers went on strike on Monday. There were reports of, you know, of lawyers involved, of teachers, of doctors, you know, basically every spectrum of the community and every ethnicity is getting involved. Now, significantly, there are no reports of any kind of fissures within the armed forces. And a big question mark is, what will the Revolutionary Guard do? Because it's, you know, it's not the Revolutionary Guard that's out on the streets killing people. It is police forces, security forces. The dreaded SAVAK, which is the intelligence service, will be out in the streets abducting people. I mean, there are, you know, horrible stories of young men and women literally being abducted off the streets by security forces and, you know, ending up dead a few days later. So state sanctioned abduction and torture and murder of protesters. Just to give you an idea of the scale of the repression, at least 144 people killed, possibly as many as 200, including a reported 24 children have been killed in the protests. So it's worth noting just the tremendous bravery of these protests. And again, very much let's emphasise the fact that it's led by young women. I mean, just extraordinarily brave young women who've had enough. Like, they're teenagers, girls in some cases, they've just had enough of the repression. And it's not, this is not an anti-religious protest, by the way, because some of the people joining the protests actually support the wearing of the hijab. But what they're opposed to is the state, you know, conservative religious state led by old men, basically forcing women to wear the hijab. It ought to be a woman's choice. That's the whole point. And of course, it's moved beyond the hijab issue to pretty much it's become now a systemic bring down the whole regime protest. There's talk of Khomeini as a fallback option, maybe stepping down if it comes to that. But of course, he would hope to replace his son would take over Mujtada Khomeini. So now the protests are even calling for chants against Mujtada, saying he will never rule. You know, we don't want Khomeini and we don't want his son. We want an end to the whole regime. You know, and it's summed up, I guess, the total nature of this protest, that the slogan which you may have read about, women, life, freedom. Women, life, freedom, which I think, as I say, sums up that this is more than about just one, you know, tragic killing of this young woman. It's become, it's snowballed into a systemic anti-government protest. As to where it goes from here, I often say I'm no longer in the business of political prediction. I think that's a mug's game. But I do think if you read accounts of a lot of Iranians themselves who have been involved in previous waves of protest, they are all saying this might be different this time. This has a sustainable quality to it. It's involving workers, students, young people, old people, da-da-da-da-da. So pretty bloody amazing stuff. It really is amazing stuff, and I'm inspired by it. And, you know, look, all power to the people of Iran. And that's it. And hopefully they continue with their protests. But we'll be sure to update that in future weeks. But just wanted to give more of a sense of the scale of it, because, as I say, I think you can get the impression, oh, this is just sort of small groups of middle-class young people. No, this is a revolt that's now spread throughout the whole country. And I think it's got to the point now where the regime is potentially, you know, genuinely under threat.
Yeah, a huge solidarity with the protesters in Iran. Thanks for that analysis, Alex. Definitely the kind of thing that you don't see on your other mainstream news outlets.
Well, it's just worth, because I think we still do have a bit of time, Joni, it's worth mentioning briefly that you're talking about the question of religion, because that one of the things that does happen, unfortunately, with these protests is the right gets hold of it and it suddenly becomes a frame for all sorts of anti-Muslim propaganda.
Mm.
And, of course, that's obviously something we want to avoid here on the Indie Media Show. This is not, you know, an anti-Islam thing. This is not, it's not a secular protest against religious authorities. That's not what's going on. As I say, there are actually plenty of religious people, plenty of devoted Muslims involved in these protests who want what? They want to see an end to a corrupt dictatorial regime that governs in the name of Islam. But a lot of Muslim people would say, well, no, they don't represent Islam. They represent this corrupt, poisoned, you know, sort of authoritarian, misogynistic version of Islam, and I want no part of it. So don't. That's worth emphasising, actually. Don't believe this nonsense that this is somehow people promoting Western democratic secular values versus backward religious values, because that it feeds into actually a lot of racism as well as racism as well as Islamophobia. So this is about democracy and life against authoritarianism and dictatorship. That's what it's about. It's not, you know, secularism versus religion.
Absolutely. Yeah, well said, Alex. Yeah, thanks again. And yeah, thanks to the folks over at 3ZZZ and Mercedes, and to Noemi for chatting on the show today. Yeah, I reckon we'd wrap things up.
We didn't get any feedback, by the way, about what you thought of the soup protest.
That poor glass.
Shall I say what I think about it, Joni? Or no, look, I mean, I personally that poor glass. I personally, while it wasn't in favour, I thought it was silly. I'm just going to go on the record and say that. It's not a tactic that I agree with. And I understand the whole thing about, yes, it was protected by glass, but I just don't get it. I don't
Even if
Van Gogh and climate change.
Even if they destroyed the painting, I think it's, you know, a small change in terms of the actual issue at stake, which is, you know, the health of the entire ecosystem on the earth. Yeah, I don't know.
So, no, but look, I'd love to know what the thought process was involved, but I don't think it was the most logical target. No, we're being a little bit cheeky, but it's just basically the point being you're better off locking yourself onto a piece of machinery or doing something like that.
Absolutely.
Leave Vincent van Gogh out of it. Come on. Just leave him out of it, please.
My partner was joking that, that they're attacking a big oil painting.
Oh, dear. Excuse me.
He was pro-oil. Yeah.
That's true. Yes.
All right.
Oil paintings. That's the connection. Oh, dear.
All right. Another great show. We will be back next week, I believe. It's myself and Zoe in the studio. In a moment, we will have Rhian Todd Hunter with Out to Lunch. Great to see you in the studio. As we always say here on Indie Media,
don't hate the media,
become the media.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.